You are Locked On Hawks, your daily Atlanta Hawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 335 of the Locked On Hawks podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland, and joining me for this evening's podcast, a new episode. It's been a while, actually, since I've had this guy on the podcast, Jeff Siegel. What's up, man?
Doing well. If you can hear church bells going in the background, that's unfortunate. We just happened to be recording right at the top of the hour, and there are three churches within a block of my house, and so you may hear church bells.
I love that, actually. I wish I had known that. We would have aimed for it, but we didn't even have to aim for it, because here we are. Anyway, not too much in the way of news. We are a week from the trade deadline, and I think you and I have talked enough plenty offline to realize that we both think that something is going to happen between now and then. But nothing in the way of rumors to hit on, so we're probably going to talk about a few guys and just break down some actual basketball and sort of mostly stay away from the deadline. If you have any hot takes you want to throw out there, any predictions, we'll do that at the end. But before we get to that, I guess the lead story on this fine evening is Dennis Schroeder, who is questionable for Friday's game in Boston against the Celtics. They announced that he has a right shoulder strain after the game on Wednesday. Bud talked about how Dennis had been in pain, and so Dennis in the post game. So not a big surprise that he's listed as questionable. Not a whole lot of information, though. A right shoulder strain could just be about anything, honestly, but I don't know. There's no reason to push him against the Celtics in a game that means absolutely nothing for the Hawks. At the same time, listing him as questionable is probably a positive in that he's not already out. That probably means he doesn't have a more serious injury, but at the same time, the Hawks are not always super clear with this. So I think I'm probably going to assume you're somewhere in the same place I am on this, but you know, no reason to push Dennis, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason to push him, but then again, if it's not anything, you know, if it's not a tear, which obviously they probably would have said, well, maybe they wouldn't have said, but
right, exactly.
if he had had an MRI and they had seen a tear, then they probably would say, like, yeah, he's going to be out for a couple weeks or 3 weeks or 6 weeks or whatever it's going to be for the degree of the tear. But I guess a shoulder strain would be something that he just, you know, either rests and recovers from, or they just play through it. Which, you know, they shouldn't play through it, honestly. You're right on track with that. Like, there's no reason. You have a long-term investment in this guy. You know, if he plays and continues to hurt it and then he actually tears it, that's going to be, you know, a big problem for him. So, you know, if I were them, I'd hold him out. But, of course, we're working with a lot of incomplete information here.
Absolutely. Yeah. We don't know a whole lot about what this is. I will say, you know, a couple of people ask me both online and offline about whether this sort of the questionable distinction could be something having to do with the trade deadline. I will say no on that. I'd be pretty surprised if the Hawks were going to try to hide something, because guess what? If you make a move, somebody's got to pass a physical. There's no hiding injuries on this kind of scale, especially with a guy like Schroeder who has so many years left on his contract. There's going to be nobody willing to take on him if there's actually a real issue in the shoulder. So no conspiracy theories here from me, at least. But yeah, we'll keep an eye on that for sure. You know, if there's any doubt whatsoever, don't play him against Boston or really against anyone. But if, you know, if he's just sore, and that was sort of the mystery in the building on Wednesday night, is that nobody kind of knew what it was or even how it happened. Even Schroeder kind of said that they weren't sure when it occurred or how it occurred. Just kind of started bugging him, and that's one of those things that it happens, and we'll keep an eye on that for sure. As for the player, we had him down to talk about anyway, so let's just talk about him a little bit. His shooting is a problem right now. I think I tweeted this out a few times, but now for the season, Schroeder is shooting 28.4% from three on the year, and that's down to 25% in the 29 games since December 1st. And obviously, you know, he's still putting up numbers offensively. His offensive rating and stuff is all pretty decent, but how much of a problem is this shooting, and how worried are you that it's going to continue? Because obviously, you know, as a full career sample, it's a little bit better than this, but still nothing great to write home about.
Yeah, I think we talked about this and we had this exact same conversation last time I was on, and it was just the same sort of thing of like, it looks weird and it doesn't go in. So, you know, there's really no reason to expect that it will go in eventually. You know, it's not like his form looks perfect and he's shooting 30%. His form looks really janky and his feet are all over the place, and the ball very rarely goes in the basket. So it's something that they'll either have to send him to a, you know, Chip Englund type shooting coach, or they're just going to deal with the fact that he's, you know, a 30% three-point shooter, and he's, you know, essentially a much faster and can finish at the rim a little bit better version of Ricky Rubio.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, like, people got excited about it last year when he shot 34% from three on the season. Like, that was obviously an uptick, but even last year, you know, he was 35% before the All-Star break and 33% after it. You know, so we started a little bit hotter, and really, if you try to expand it out into, like, the last, I don't know, 60, 70 games, he's somewhere even below 30% in that kind of stretch. So I'm not sure he's this bad. Again, I think I've said that before. I don't think he's actually a 28% three-point shooter, but I do think he's a 32% three-point shooter, which is what his career number is. And honestly, if he's going to do that, that kind of limits the ceiling a lot. Obviously, you know, he's been able to put up numbers this year because of the usage. But you've seen even more and more, I've been observing that teams are just playing him under at all times. And they honestly should. They're treating him like, I mean, you mentioned Rubio. Obviously, the Rondo comparison's always kind of been out there. It's not quite as bad as those guys necessarily, but because Dennis is at least a better mid-range shooter than those guys have been, at least in the past. He's been a pretty good mid-range shooter on the whole, but from three-point range, the guys are going to keep going below every screen with him, and they should, because, you know, even as we talked about before, his ability to go to the rim is basically all based on his speed. So if guys are playing off of him, that really takes that away as well. So it's one of those things where I'm not worried about his offensive game in an overall sense necessarily, but it does limit his ceiling greatly if he's not going to be able to make threes. And at this point, there's not really a whole lot of evidence. I mean, if you look at the numbers, Schroeder has now attempted, let's see, I had it in front of me. Oh yeah. He's attempted almost 1,000 threes in the NBA and has made 32% of them. So that's kind of, at that point in time, unless something crazy happens or you have a mechanical change, you kind of just are what you are.
Yeah. I mean, at some point we are getting to a usable sample, and I think by 1,000 threes we're probably there, and he's just not a good shooter, and that just sort of is what it is. He's solid from mid-range. He can get to the basket. When guys go under, he just needs to be as aggressive as possible and go, you know, try to use that as a runway to get his speed up to where, you know, nobody can catch him. I think that's a lot of what drove Ben Simmons' success early in the season, is when people would go under, he would just go, and he would treat it like they weren't even there and try to go, you know, he would go right through them. Dennis would have to sort of go around them. But it's, you know, it's the same sort of concept of, if they're going to step under, use those three steps as just a runway to the basket. So, you know, that's what, you know, I would be advising him if I were a Hawks coach. But I think, you know, if he's, it, like you said, it limits what he can be if he really is just a, you know, 30-32% three-point shooter.
And yeah, I mean, there's a sharp divide, I think, and we talk about that a lot, just as to how people perceive him locally versus nationally. That kind of came to a head a little bit, at least in the, there was a, I wouldn't say it was necessarily news, but Zach Lowe wrote about the Bucks on Thursday, and within that piece, he referenced apparently there were some trade discussions between the Bucks and the Hawks before Milwaukee traded for Eric Bledsoe of a, quote, similar deal that would have involved Dennis Schroeder. And basically, you know, at the end of the day, the Bucks got Bledsoe for their first-round pick this year protected, and Greg Monroe, and a second-round pick that's, you know, not exactly super appetizing, which that didn't surprise me at all. I mean, I think if you were to tell me that, you know, with Monroe expiring, you're looking at basically an expiring contract and a mid first-round pick for Dennis Schroeder is about what I would imagine you're going to get for him. Honestly, that wouldn't be a bad deal at all. But a lot of the reaction was, what do you mean? They're basically just going to give him away? And it's like, well, no, that's not giving him away. I mean, you look at a guy that still has 3 years left on his contract after this one. And if anything, he's overpaid. He's certainly not underpaid. I think he probably could live up to the contract if he were to come on in a big way here. But at the same time, like, getting a first-round pick for Dennis Schroeder and not taking back bad salary would not have been a bad trade at all for the Hawks. Like, in fact, that's probably as good as you can probably, you know, expect to do at this point in time. Whereas a lot of Hawks fans would have been, I think, judging by the reaction, just the report, would have been upset with that deal. But honestly, it made sense to me if the Hawks were having those discussions. Did that strike you in any certain way?
I mean, I think if it was something, if that same trade for Schroeder had happened, then I think we would have been like, yeah, that seems like fine value. Now that Greg Monroe and a protected first-round pick went for Eric Bledsoe, they wouldn't be able to get a similar package for Schroeder just because Bledsoe's so much better than Dennis is. And, you know, I think it's really tough to say because, like, it's hard to judge Schroeder if you're a contender. It's hard to judge Schroeder on how he's played this season because you can just see how sort of, you know, he just doesn't try. He doesn't seem to care about defense that much. but you can, you know, the tools are there, and you know that he can play to that level when he's on a, you know, on a better team or in a, you know, slightly smaller role. So I think if the if a contender is sort of looking at him as a piece to acquire, then they'd have to think that they could get him to really just to give a crap on the defensive end. You know, that's what matters. And you know, if they look at him and see like, yeah, you know, we've got a good culture, we've got, you know, a leader in the locker room who's going to get, you know, get after him. I think that's where, you know, a team could talk themselves into, you know, an expiring contract and Dennis and a first round pick for Dennis. But, you know, at this point with that as sort of the baseline, I would expect, you know, an expiring contract and a much heavier protected first rounder or even like a juicier second rounder.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why, I mean, in addition to there just not being a whole lot of teams that need point guards right now, Milwaukee obviously filled their need. Aside from Phoenix and maybe Orlando, there really aren't that obvious, those obvious places right now, which is why, you know, there's some of the reporting, I believe it was Kevin O'Connor of The Ringer reported that it was much more likely that the Hawks would trade Schroeder in the offseason. That makes a lot of sense to me. And we probably shouldn't assume that it was going to be the exact same trade. It did say similar, not exactly the same, but I think it was definitely telling of the dichotomy between how he's viewed locally versus nationally, because again, I've said this before, but a lot of the national guys that you and I read and talk to occasionally, it's you know, nobody seems to think that Dennis Schroeder is going to be in super high demand on the trade market, and that would not blow me away at all. But I think it would surprise a lot of people locally, that especially if they're not, you know, necessarily taking in every game and just see the guy who's averaging, you know, 19 or 20 points a game and 7 assists. It's a very different sort of perception of him outside of Atlanta.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the two teams that you mentioned in Phoenix and Orlando, they're not contenders. They're not looking at him like, yeah, we're going to bring him into our culture and he's going to, you know, turn up the effort. Like, that's not going to happen. He's going to be the exact same guy that he is in Atlanta, probably even worse, because, you know, at least there's some semblance of a Spurs-like culture in Atlanta, even though it's sort of gone awry with the team not being quite as good the last 2 years, really. Even though last year they made the playoffs, it wasn't the best sort of culture and ethos to be around, I guess. But yeah, I don't, you know, Schroeder, if he got dealt before, you know, before a week from now, it would really surprise me personally. I just don't see the contender destination for him. And unless Phoenix is just like all of a sudden really in love with him, but we haven't heard anything about Phoenix, you know, going after Schroeder. We haven't heard anything about any of the guys really, which actually has me kind of worried that the Hawks are, you know, maybe going to sit on some of their expiring contracts, Dedmon, Ilyasova, and Bellinelli in particular. I would think that they would be more active. And if they were more active, then the teams that they were calling would be leaking that out. I know the Hawks don't leak anything ever, but like if they called Milwaukee's people, whoever receives the call on their end, would certainly be leaking that out to Woj or whoever. You know, that's just the way these things work. That's how we get rumors, is people leak them. You know, Woj isn't actually on those phone calls. You know, he gets the information later, and that's the way this works. And the Hawks obviously are you know, the no leak Hawks, as they have been since Budenholzer got the job. But you know, you would think that the names would be out there, and the names, you know, other than like little pieces here and there, like Cleveland maybe going after Kent Bazemore, that sort of died down after a couple weeks ago. There really hasn't been a whole lot, and it's a little worrying from somebody who would want the Hawks to maximize the value of the guys on the roster, which, you know, in this case is to trade most of them.
Yeah, I'm a little worried as well. I do think, you know, I've said this before, the only guy on the roster who I would be surprised, like legitimately surprised, was still on the team, is Bellinelli. I think he's the only one that, you know, I can't see the Hawks holding on to, and even if they can't trade him, I think they're probably going to buy him out. But aside from that, I'm hoping that they get some value for some of these expiring contracts. But everybody else, I wouldn't be blown away if they were to stay. You know, Bellinelli's got sort of the only, I think he's sort of in a tier by himself as in terms of likelihood to move, either by trade or by free agency, once he's bought out. So anyway, we can probably get into that a little bit later. And obviously, it's pretty much pure speculation at this point in time. But you know, back to Schroeder, just one last thing. It's just one of those things where you have to keep an eye on him, because he's an interesting player/contract, and we don't know how Travis Schlenk feels about him, because he wasn't Schlenk's guy. You know, Schlenk didn't draft him. Schlenk didn't give him the extension. So we kind of are in the dark on that, and some of the reporting's not been great about how his perception is. So keep an eye on that. And, you know, I'm not rooting for the Hawks to give him away. Like, you wouldn't want to make a bad deal to get rid of Schroeder. It's not to the point where you're doing the Dwight Howard, you have to shed him for at any cost kind of thing. But at the same time, like, it does sort of limit you in a lot of ways, because you do owe him so much money over the next 3.5 years that it's not like he's this incredibly movable piece. So anyway, we'll keep an eye on that in the future. Jeff, before we get into everything else, man, I do want to talk to the good people about the folks at MyBookie. Hey guys, the big game is here, and it's time to cash in big and bet the game at mybookie.ag. If you haven't checked them out, it's the perfect weekend to get in the action. Have a hunch of who's going to win the coin toss or what color the winning coach Gatorade's the Gatorade bath will be. Log on now, check out the props, and get in on the action. Don't just watch the big game. Lay down some money and be part of it. Join me and thousands of other online players to start betting at mybookie.ag. MyBookie is the industry-leading online sportsbook, and its players enjoy the fastest payouts in the business when they happen to win. I would only recommend a service that's been good to me and our listeners, and that's why I urge you to make your way to MyBookie. You win, and they pay without any hassle whatsoever. You're wasting your time betting anywhere else, and they even have in-game live betting so you can place a bet after the game is kicked off. So you want to join now and score free cash to place your Super Bowl wager on the house. Right now, MyBookie is giving away up to $1,000 to every single new player. Sign up today to score an instant 50% bonus on your first deposit. That's right. If you join with $100, you'll get an extra $50 to play with if you use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA. That's LOCKEDONNBA to activate this offer. Play, win, and get paid by using the promo code LOCKEDONNBA. All right, Jeff. Obviously, we have to get a Super Bowl pick at the end of this thing, just by the way, so start preparing for that. Let's move on to Taurean Prince, who has been an interesting topic for a lot of people recently, including myself. I think he's been pretty flatly bad for an entire month. I put together his stats here. Prior to January, he was shooting 45% from the field, 43% from three, and averaging about 13 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists, and a steal per game. And in the month of January, he played a little bit less minutes, which was basically just because he wasn't playing well. Shot 35% from the floor, 31% from three, averaged about 9 points and 3.5 rebounds, 2 assists per game. And if anything, his defense got worse. So what have you seen from Taurean? Obviously, the numbers are not great for him, and I think you've sensed some frustration from Bud and a couple times that he's been asked about it. But is it as bad as I think it is? Because I think for me, he's been probably the biggest disappointment for about the last 4 or 5 weeks.
So I think if we go back to the summer, if we had gone back to August and had this discussion, we wouldn't have expected 43% Taurean Prince from beyond the arc.
Like, totally
we
just agree with that.
That was something that came out of nowhere, and we were like, oh, that's great, but where, you know, how did that happen? Where did that come from? We expected him to hit his defensive ceiling way before he ever hit his offensive ceiling. And then he hit it. He hit that offensive ceiling in the first 2 months. And now he's sort of regressed backwards. And I'm wondering if this is the Taurean Prince who's sort of more, who's closer to the actual version of Taurean Prince, who is not a 31%, but maybe he's more of like a 35, 36% three-point shooter. And this is sort of just the law of averages coming back to bite him after shooting, you know, ridiculously for the first two and a half months of the year. You know, and because of the way that happened, because of the way he was playing so well offensively, and then it sort of fell off. And of course, with the team losing so much, you know, it's hard to blame anybody in that situation for getting a little bit down and just sort of losing that defensive effort that is required really to keep him on the floor, especially if he's shooting, you know, 31% from three. And so you know you can see the frustrations from Bud. You can see it in Prince's body language, honestly, like on the floor. He just doesn't, you know, it doesn't look right really ever since the beginning of January. You know, I saw him back-to-back games in L.A. He sort of dislocated or that finger. You know, you can't imagine that the finger is still a problem unless the medical staff has just completely missed like a bad dislocation or a break. But like you know it when you break a bone or dislocate something like that, it swells up. Like it shouldn't be, it can't be that anymore, you know, 3 or 4 weeks later. So, you know, it's got to be something, you know, just, you know, it's either just law of averages coming back to bite him, or it's just, you know, it's something's going on with him off the court. Something, you know, mentally he's not as locked in as he was in the first couple of months. The losing has gotten to him. Something like that. It's got to be, you know, what's bothering him at this point.
Yeah, I mean, it's for me the jump shot going a little bit awry is not a big surprise. As you mentioned, he was shooting over his head. I think we all kind of agreed on that early on in the year, and the reckoning was going to come there. I think it's definitely encouraging that he's still I think he's a better shooter now than I thought he was going to be at this point in time. So that's worth saying, even with the January numbers being what they are. Still, I think the more concerning part is what you kind of mentioned there, the lack of intensity, the lack of just sort of fire, and especially defensively, the lack of attentiveness, effort's been an issue, which you never want to see for a second-year player. I know the Hawks are not necessarily competing right now, but at the same time, you look around the floor, and it's only a couple of guys who you can really point to as not giving a whole lot of defensive effort. It's basically Schroeder and Prince. Those are the guys who I think should be better defenders than they actually are. You know, a guy like Marco Bellinelli is just terrible defensively. Like, that's not necessarily all about effort. He's just bad, and he's always been bad. Whereas there's no reason that Prince or Schroeder should be bad defensively. They don't have to be these like super lockdown guys, but it's basically all effort related. There's a little bit of learning curve still with Torian, who's a guy who obviously played a ton of zone in college and is a second year player. I'm sure he's not exactly the most polished guy in the world defensively, but still, like, we've seen him when he's trying defensively, when he's locked in defensively, play at a quality level. And recently, especially, I think it's gotten worse, which is troubling. I think, you know, again, I'm sure the anti-tanking folks would point to the fact that they're not trying to win, and I'm sure that's not rubbing off on him in the most positive way. But my counter would be, your second year player that hasn't proven a darn thing in the league, and not trying on defense is not exactly the greatest thing for you looking forward.
Yeah, I wonder if we look back on this 4 or 5 years from now, and Prince is sort of the Nerlens Noel from Philadelphia's process, where they, you know, they draft him, they traded to get that pick the same way the 76ers traded to get Noel, and then it sort of was fine for a little bit, and then it just sort of the losing wore on him, and he just, you know, his personality more than his actual, you know, on court talent, you know, wins out in terms of getting him out of town. And so I wonder, you know, it's very early. It's obviously only been 4 weeks. I'm not going to call him Nerlens Noel, who's, you know, quickly, you know, arguing his way out of the league almost, it seems like. But it does seem like there are some parallels there. And I wonder if Prince sort of turns into that guy who, you know, Hawks fans were really excited about when they drafted him, when he played well last year in the playoffs and coming into this sort of rebuilding process, but just doesn't quite have the personality to play through all the losing and to continue that high effort.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I'm trying my best to not make sweeping judgments on Prince, and it's tough when you see him up close a lot, as obviously I'm on the scene more times than not, obviously, to see those guys up close to person, just frustrating to see the lack of effort. And listen, he's not that young. I mean, he'll be 24 in March. It's not like he's a 20-year-old guy. I know he's a second-year player, but this is a college veteran, so you would expect him to mature quickly. And, you know, early in the year, people were impressed, and I was too, about the way he especially was playing offensively. We sort of lamented his defensive effort even early on, but I think it's actually, again, gotten a little bit worse. So something to monitor for sure. And I think Bud's been trying a couple different things to send some messages to him. He didn't start a second half earlier this week and was benched and did not really play at all in the second half. I mean, not in the second half, but the last portion of the third quarter and the early portion of the fourth quarter, when he would have been playing normally on Wednesday, he was taken out. And I'm sure that had to do with just lack of performance. And I'm all about giving guys minutes and giving guys time to develop. And I will argue to the end of times that the Hawks should be playing young guys right now. But at some point, when you're just bad and not giving effort, the playing time has to wax and wane. So we'll see what happens with Torian, but at least worth bringing up the fact that he's been a little bit disappointing recently. The other guy I sort of mainly wanted to hit on this podcast is Tyler Dorsey, because a lot of people have been paying attention to Tyler Dorsey now that he's in the rotation and has been for a little bit here. He's shooting the ball well, 40% from three. He's still only 50% true shooting guy, because his two-point shooting has actually been pretty shaky. But, you know, his rebounding has been very good. People have sort of glommed onto that. So what have you seen from Dorsey? Do you think highly of him now when compared to a couple of months ago? I know I have at least improved my opinion on him a little bit. So where are you at with Tyler Dorsey in general?
Yeah, I think he's gotten better. You know, it's not that he's gotten better, but he's at least had the opportunity to show it. I still have big questions about just sort of his overall makeup and how he's going to, you know, be successful. If three-point shooting is if the three-point shooting is real, then that would be, you know, that would be ideal. But the two-point shooting worries me. The defense obviously still worries me. You know, he doesn't seem still like a high-end NBA rotation player, but he might be sort of more of a 11th or 12th guy, somebody who plays in blowouts and sort of does that sort of thing on a good team. But he just, I don't know, I'm not sold, you know, even though he's gotten some minutes recently, and he has actually shown, you know, some more rebounding prowess than I had expected. It just doesn't, the rest of his game that's not 3-point shooting and not just getting buckets with the ball in his hand, just, you know, it's, I'm still a little skeptical of his overall development and how well he'll fit on a real team.
Yeah, I think I am too. I mean, it's one of those things where I did not love that pick when it happened, and I think I voiced that on this podcast and other places. I thought it was a terrible pick or anything like that. It's a mid second round pick. There aren't always a ton of guys that you love in that range, and basically all the guys I liked in the second round went right before Tyler Dorsey. So it wasn't like the Hawks made this huge mistake or anything. But at the same time, I would have wagered that, you know, it was more likely than not that Dorsey would not become an NBA rotation player. I think I'd still be there. I'm just a little bit more optimistic on him than I was before the season started. And I think a lot of people are getting higher on him than I am at this point in time, which is not a big surprise. You know, you're looking for bright spots on this young sort of bad team. And he has had some moments. He had a couple of very nice moments in the last couple of weeks. A good friend of the program, Tyler Jones, is kind of all in on Dorsey. And I know why. I mean, it's one of those things where if you see him on the right night, he looks really good. I've long thought that if he shot the ball well, he'd have a chance to be an NBA player. And that was his ticket. That was his sort of his calling card. He was a good shot creator in college. But for me, he's going to have to be that 40% 3-point shooter to really be an NBA rotation guy, because he's, what is he, 6'4", and he's not a point guard. I mean, he can have the ball in his hands. I asked him actually after a game recently about, he had to play some point guard down the stretch of a game a little bit, and he wasn't uncomfortable in that role, but I don't think he has enough sort of speed and playmaking and really defensive aptitude against point guards to be able to play that role consistently. So for me, a pure shooting guard, he's going to have to just shoot the heck out of the ball. And look, he's done that so far from 3-point range. The 2-point range is a little bit worrying, as you kind of mentioned there. But if he shoots like this, I can see it. If he doesn't shoot like this, I don't want to see it at all, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, the ability to shoot will make or break his career, like it does for a lot of guys, like it does for a lot of bench guys, a lot of role guys who just have to be able to make shots. But it's, you know, that's his calling card in particular. And you can sort of, you know, using cleaning the glasses stat system, you can sort of differentiate between garbage time and real, you know, NBA action in terms of when all 10 guys are trying. And he doesn't fare very well in their stats, as he's gotten a lot of sort of garbage time buckets that has helped that 40% shooting. You know, by their numbers, he's got, you know, 33% from three, you know, during non-garbage time. So it's, you know, maybe not as rosy. Those are sort of the numbers that I like to look at rather than just sort of his basketball reference. Overall numbers, just especially for a guy like Dorsey who's playing a lot of garbage time minutes. But, you know, it's obviously very few minutes. It's less than 200 non-garbage time minutes. So it's, you know, it's still possible that he's going to, you know, turn that around and be a solid player when everybody's actually trying out there. But I remain just as skeptical as I was, you know, really when he wasn't playing and was only in the G League.
Yeah, it's perfectly reasonable. And look, and with that said, like, I think you and I are probably a little bit lower on him than most people are. I would still say, for me, I want to see him as much as I can in the next couple of months, especially, you know, once the deadline passes, they shouldn't give 1 minute to Marco Bellinelli ahead of Tyler Dorsey. Just go ahead and play him. I mean, there's no reason not to. It's not like you're worried about the playoffs or anything. So invest in your young guys, and that means a lot to Tyler Dorsey for me. Even if they don't pull off trades for everybody, you know, obviously you're going to still be playing guys like Bazemore and Schroeder who are going to be on the team long term. But aside from that, I mean, give the young guys, including Dorsey, a lot of reps. I'd like to see him play a little more. So I've been encouraged he's been playing, even if I would argue at times he probably isn't the best option to try and win. That's not really necessarily the goal right now. So just give him all the minutes he can handle.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you might as well see what you have from him, and you have to just give him as many minutes as possible after the trade deadline, whether Bellinelli's on the team or not. He should be that backup shooting guard to Bazemore.
Yeah, I mean, get him out there. And I think, you know, given that Bazemore is basically your backup small forward as well, you could see a lot of, even more with Dorsey. Obviously, he can't play any three because he's even smaller than Bazemore and doesn't have the defensive aptitude. But especially, I mean, you've been basically seeing the combination of Luke Babbitt and Kent Bazemore as your backup, and Marco Bellinelli as your backup small forward. If Bellinelli's off the roster, they have to play basically two shooting guards at a time on the wing most of the time when Prince isn't on the court. So that means even more time for Dorsey, which is, again, just fine. Give him all the time he wants. And obviously we'll still see those two-point guard lineups with Dennis Schroeder and Malcolm Delaney as well. But there's plenty of minutes for Tyler Dorsey once the deadline passes. Well, Jeff, I've probably kept you too long, as usual, as what we do. But anything else you wanted to get out there? I know I wanted to. I mean, I prepped you on a couple of things, but you know, we just talk too much, you and I. But anything else that that you wanted to get out there and share with the people, please feel free to do so.
No, we'll hit everything else in the next one. We had a couple of things that we didn't get to, but that's pretty much how that usually goes for us. For me, you know, just follow me on Twitter at JG Siegel. You can find my Hawk stuff at Peachtree Hoops. I may or may not have something on Tyler Dorsey coming in the next few days, depending on when I can actually get off my butt and do it. you can find Portland Trailblazers stuff at Blazers Edge. You can find the rest of the league over at Fansided's The Step Back, and I've been, you know, pretty much hitting it over there pretty much every day. So, you know, anything you want, from trade deadline stuff to cap stuff to X's and O's from the games that are actually happening, despite everybody being all up in arms about the trade deadline, they are still playing games, and so there's some X's and O's stuff to cover there. So, you know, I've been pretty much pumping out, you know, anything I can think of at this point.
Yeah, there is basketball to take in. I'm watching two games as we speak on my two screens in front of me, so at least half watching while we are talking. Two quick things before I let you get out of here. The first one is more of a just an announcement, and that is the fact that out of 478 qualified players on ESPN's RPM this morning, Dennis Schroeder is number 476 in defensive RPM, and Marco Bellinelli is number 473. So the Hawks have two of the worst six defensive players in the league according to that metric. I mean,
surprise me in any way.
I'm not surprised either, but I just wanted to, you know, when you see a stat that's that bad, you kind of have to just share it, and that is pretty rough. And number two, I know you're not this this monster NFL guy, but do you have any Super Bowl pick for me?
I have to. What's the line? Eagles, Patriots line.
I think it's 4.5 or 5.
Okay.
Now, it's kind of been everywhere. Actually, this is probably too deep for most people on this basketball podcast. But I think it opened like 6, 6.5, and it's been kind of all over the place. What does it say now? When you Google it, what did it say?
It didn't come up with anything because gambling is illegal in most places.
That is true.
Where am I looking for this? I don't even know where to find NFL lines because I'm just so useless.
It's okay. This is not your area of expertise. Yeah, we'll say 4.5 because that's the sort of consensus at the moment. So
all right, I'll take Philadelphia plus 4.5 because the Patriots never seem to win a Super Bowl just running away with it.
That is seems to be sort of the overarching opinion, which kind of scares me. If you like the Eagles in this game, that kind of is a little terrifying because everybody seems to like the Eagles. But yeah, I will also take Philly. I think New England.
I won't take Philly to win.
Yeah,
I would not take Philly to win. I think they're going to lose. Like pretty much 90 out of 100 times they're going to lose. But there's enough of those times where they lose by just a field goal that you take the 4.5.
If you have a friend that doesn't care about actual gambling and just wants to bet you straight up on the game as to the winner, take the Patriots. But yeah, the line I'll lean Philly as well. But wanted to at least get that out there. Of course, we did the bye bookie read early on in the podcast, and it seems to be in the spirit of that. It is Super Bowl weekend. This is the last pot of the week, so getting it out there and checking all that is probably it's probably the only time that we'll do a football pick on the podcast. But it's Super Bowl. It's what happens.
Super Bowl props are your best friend for watching the game. It's so much fun. Sometimes I'll put together like a whole sheet of them. Like you just download like an Excel sheet and like I'll just pass them out at whatever party you're at. And people just, you know, all you have to do is just check one or the other. They're 50-50 for the most part anyway. Over under like 200 yards for some, you know, for passing or whatever, 250 yards maybe. Those are super fun. So, you know, props are the best part of the game other than the commercials. And so that's what I'll be watching pretty much.
Spoken like a true NBA fan, Jeff.
Pretty much at this point.
The commercials and the props is what Jeff wants. And no, it's fine. I mean, I actually have no beef with that. Most people watch the game and listen. It's basically just a holiday at this point in time. Even if people don't care about the game, they're going to watch it even if they want to see Justin Timberlake or whatever else is going on. So anyway, we're far afield at this point, but I really appreciate it, my friend. Please follow Jeff. Check out Jeff's stuff, whatever it may be about. Even if it's not Hawks, give him the click, if nothing else, and we'll have you on back soon, sir.
All right, thank you.
As for everybody else, I am taking the rest of the weekend. I actually have to move. The Hawks are in action on Friday in Boston, but no Saturday morning pod. We will hold for a weekend recap that I will record on Sunday afternoon and evening, because after the Friday game, the Hawks play the noon tip, the dreaded noon tip at Madison Square Garden in New York. So that'll be interesting to see how the Hawks respond to whatever happens on Friday. So all that to say, we'll have a new pod for Monday morning that I'll record on Sunday. And until then, enjoy your weekend and go Eagles, I guess.